I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Miriam Taves joins me again. She's just published her sixth novel, All My Puny Sorrows. It's already gotten remarkable notices. In the book, we meet two sisters, Elfrida and Yolandi. Yoli has a messy life in Toronto, two teenage kids and other complications. Elf is an accomplished concert pianist, glamorous, married, and harbors suicidal thoughts. In fact, she acts on them just weeks before a concert tour around the world. The two sisters are brought together, and the story looks at siblinghood, mental health, love, grief, and more. I'll get Ms. Taves to tell us about this book and more. Miriam Taves is the award-winning author of the novel Summer of My Amazing Luck, A Boy of Good Breeding, A Complicated Kindness, The Flying Troutmans, and Irma Voth. She's also written a book of nonfiction, Swing Low, A Life. This new book is published by Knopf. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Miriam Taves. Ms. Taves, good morning.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I can't wait to start this book because it's intriguing for me on a lot of levels. First, the notices have been quite good, but it deals with the serious issues that Elf goes through with some good measure of humor, as well as it looks at the relationships between siblings. That's something that I don't know anything about, being an only child. How do you explain the relationship that two siblings have to someone like me, perhaps, who doesn't have a sibling?
Yeah, well, Elfrida and Yolandi are they're in their 40s, and so you know they've been through a lot of stuff together and on their own. And Elfrida, basically, I think Yolandi sums it up and says, "We were two enemies who loved each other because the central conflict at the heart of the novel is that Elfrida would like to die and Yolandi would very much like to keep her alive."
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, where does that bond come from, do you think? Is that from birth, do you think, or is that developed over the years?
I don't know. I mean, I think siblings have, they have a very special kind of relationship. I know that for me, with my sister, I mean, she was just somebody that we had a shorthand way of communicating because so much was understood, and we didn't have to say it necessarily. This sounds a little bit frivolous, but nobody made me laugh harder than my sister.
Uh-huh.
That sort of shared sensibility, shared outlook on life. At least for me, it was. I mean, there are siblings obviously who maybe don't have such a close bond, but I think it's a very, it's a unique relationship.
Yeah, do you think I'm missing out?
Well, I don't know, do you?
I don't know, because it seems like, you know, there isn't really anyone that I have a shorthand with,
right,
you know, and
right,
one that would go back, you know, you know, I'm 32, so at least, you know, three decades, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I would. I don't think you're missing out, but it's one of those things that, you know, it's a different type of relationship. But I'm sure you have other kinds of relationships.
Yeah, you know, I do. Yeah, I guess you make your own, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. But it is that thing where you sort of expect and kind of assume, at least if it's a good relationship, you just take it for granted that that person will always be in your corner.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Elf, has she always been sick? Like, even as a child?
Yeah, I think that there were signs. I think it's kind of, I touch on that in the book, that there are warning signs, kind of off in the distance, that Elf suffers a type of melancholy, maybe it would be described that way at the beginning, and a restlessness, anxiety, a kind of existential rage against the miseries of the world, the duplicity, these mm-hmm. types of things that a lot of people rage against. Elf really takes it to heart, and I think that's something that she it's just how, yes, how she was born.
And does Yoli understand what her sister's going through?
Yoli understands to a certain degree. She knows that life is harder for Elf. In spite of Elf having all the kind of conventional trappings of a successful so-called happy life, that she just, it's a hard way to be Elfrida, and that the she's in pain, so this psychic pain, this kind of free-range pain all the time, and Yolandi does understand that. What she doesn't understand really, or doesn't want to understand at the beginning of the book, certainly, is that Elfrida is in so much pain that she would prefer to die and to end it than to stay alive.
Now, is suicide? I mean, I don't know very much about all of this, about mental illness. I mean, I'm like everyone else, I guess. We don't know how to talk about it. We don't know very much about it.
Right.
Suicide isn't the answer to it, right?
Of course not. No, and no. I mean, suicide. You know, there are all sorts of outcomes. That come with mental health and with people who are suffering from it. And the best, of course. And the most common is that people recover, or they go through cycles and they experience it and they find ways, hopefully, of dealing it, of treating it, and they're given proper care. But, I mean, that's not the case with everyone.
Yeah, and so why does Elf get to that place?
Elf, she worked for a long, long, long time struggling to live with her pain. And so it's not just a spontaneous, sudden decision. And I don't know. I mean, I've asked myself this too, the whole nature of suicide, why some people take their lives and others don't. I mean, it's something that I've thought about so much and addressed in my work and probably will continue to at some level.
You were on with Gian Gomeshi this week, and he asked you a really great question, and I've been racking my brain trying to rephrase it to make it my own, but to hell with it.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a brilliant interviewer, so I'll just ask the question that he asked you, and this is something that I guess Yoli deals with in the book, is that what are the limits to family love?
That is a good question. And again, I can't remember exactly what my answer was. I'll try to rephrase it to make it sound original, like the first time I've ever said it. but I think that we think, and I think it's necessary that we believe this, that there are no limits to our love. You know, that we love the people we love them. We love them unconditionally. We love them like crazy. We don't want any harm to come to them. We would do whatever we could to save them, to save their lives. You know, that's what love is, and that seems to be limitless. If we define love in those terms. However, I think when it comes to just this specific issue of somebody you love saying to you, please, begging you, please, please help me to end my pain, please help me to die, that's when we think, okay, the conventional thinking would be, well, of course not. I love you. I don't want you to die. But then if you really think about it, then how do we define love in those circumstances? And that's one of the questions I hope that the book raises.
Yeah, and so in the course of writing the book, did you come to some sort of peace, perhaps, as to what happened in your own life?
I think so. I mean, I think it's an ongoing process, and certainly I want to, and I feel that I am at a place of understanding. You know, I have and had a great deal of respect and love, you know, for my sister. I mean, she was somebody I looked up to. She was an intelligent, supportive, guiding person in my life. So for her to make this decision, you know, I need to respect that decision. I need to, and I know that she would want me to understand it and not to live with the pain of that for the rest of my life. So that's something that I need to work on.
Yeah, and I guess in writing the book, that's part of the process of working on it, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's always, you know, writing, I always get a little, I'm sort of conflicted about the whole question, you know, the writing is therapy and catharsis and everything, because, of course, there's an element of that, but, you know, hopefully I'm crafting some narrative that's artful, and it's what I do, and write fiction, and there are all the other elements of a story, and it's not just therapeutic. In fact, I think you have to have a kind of a distance from your work, an emotional distance, in order to focus on it, to create, you know, to make something decent. So it's both. Where the therapeutic result comes from, I'm not sure at what point in the process, but maybe not necessarily in the actual writing of it.
Do you think you find some comfort in the fact that we're talking about these things?
Yes, absolutely. I find some comfort in it. Because, I mean, ultimately, I wouldn't want anybody to have to go through what my sister went through and what so many other people go through. So if writing a book like this can shed a little light, can get people talking, can actually affect some change, I mean, that would be a small miracle.
A lot of people in the reviews of the book have talked about the humor that's in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is some sadness, there is some grief, but mm-hmm. but there is a lot of humor. Where do you think that comes from? I mean, is that your sister, perhaps?
Well, I think it's it's another question that I'm asked frequently, and I always struggle to come up with an adequate answer because I don't really know. I mean, I know, for instance, my mother who has gone through so much, suffered so much in her life, from day one almost. There's nobody who finds as much comedy, you know, or things to laugh at as her. And so, I mean, laughing at something is different than, you know, telling the joke. But I don't know if it's a genetic thing. It's the way that I see the world. It's the way. It's a necessity. It's a survival mechanism. It's a. It's an outlook, and it's a direction that I'm always drawn to. But with the caveat that, you know, although I can see humor and I like to, sort of write in comic scenarios, that doesn't mean that I'm not also familiar and acquainted with the darkness.
Yeah, your sister was a lot of fun, though, as you said earlier, right?
Yeah, she was. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, she, there was that thing that we shared that I will miss, and then I try to, recreate in different ways.
Yeah. The other thing that people get from your work, and I suspect a lot of people have learned about the Mennonite experience from your books. Do you think that's the case? The depictions thereof. They're obviously what you feel or what you feel that you need to depict. Do you hear back from Mennonites, say, and what they think of how they're depicted in your work?
Yeah, I do. I'm always surprised by the amount of support that I get from Mennonites, even some very traditional conservative Mennonites who religious Mennonites. Obviously I don't only get support. I get some negative critical feedback as well. People ask me, you know, who do you think you are airing our dirty laundry, or, you know, none of this is true and stuff like that, but that's okay. I'm used to that. But the support that I get is the thing that I'm so grateful for. People saying, you know, these are maybe some harsh realities that are kind of hard to look at, but maybe we should address them and try and keep people within our churches and our congregations, keep young people in it, you know, try and live by the tenets of our faith, actually. And a lot of Mennonites are doing that, of course.
So I was reading the review that the... I don't know if it was a review or an article about you, but it was in the Toronto Star. Mm-hmm. And I guess you live in Toronto now, right?
I do, yes.
Yeah, and so they referred to you as a Torontonian.
Ooh, really?
In the article, yeah. And then someone left a really snarky comment at the bottom saying that, you know, just because she lives in Toronto doesn't mean she's a Torontonian.
So that must have been a Winnipegger.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Yeah, so do you, you still feel like a Winnipegger, right?
Well, yeah, I think I'll always feel like a Winnipegger. When people ask me where I'm from, you know, cab drivers, I say I'm from Toronto, and I am from Toronto, and I want to make it my home because it is slowly, gradually becoming my home, and I like living there, but I think, yeah, essentially I'll always be a Winnipegger.
Yeah. How have you found this book tour? You've had to go through a lot writing this book, I'm wondering, having to talk about it all again, do you understand more, perhaps?
I think so. I'm just, again, so grateful for the fact that people are wanting to talk about it, that people want to talk to me about the book and to, you know, explore some of these issues it's hard for me to say, obviously, with any kind of certainty what people get out of the book. Everybody gets their own thing and comes at it with their own set of circumstances and beliefs and experiences. But so doing the book tour is, it's a little exhausting sometimes, but it's really gratifying too.
Yeah, and do you think maybe a year, 2 years, 5 years down the road, will have a better way of talking about assisted suicide in this country, at least?
Absolutely, and I think it's already starting. I think that people are becoming less frightened by the concept, and willing to admit, okay, our mortality is a thing that's real, and we're all going to die, and let's talk about this thing called the good death, and how we can achieve that. It's a complicated issue, obviously, and a radical one for many people, but I think that more and more Canadians are willing to talk about it.
No, I'm assuming you don't read the reviews for your books, or do you?
Not really, no. I don't.
But you do know that the notices have been quite good, that it's struck a chord. And do you have an idea of perhaps why that is?
I don't know. I don't know exactly. You never know why one book is going to resonate more or less. It's just, I suppose, maybe I could just venture a guess and just to say that because of the issue of mental health that's sort of at the center of the book, that this is something that affects so many people, whether they suffer from it themselves, whether they know somebody who does. It's such a there's such a stigma still attached to it. It causes so much harm, so much destruction, so much pain and suffering to so many people that and it's so misunderstood by so many people at the same time. And I think that it's just something that I think that issue is something that affects a lot of people.
And Miriam, I can't wait to read this book and get out of it what so many have already. Continued good luck with it. It's nice talking again.
Thanks very much. Nice talking to you too.
The book is called All My Puny Sorrows. It's published by Knopf. It's author Miriam Taves. Joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plato.